recorded live in Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest.
Hey, this is Jizzy Pearl of Love Hate, and you've got the right to rock.
Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal, they use aluminum foil for toilet paper. It's Genghis and Ragman.
Crazy for feeling so lonely.
Crazy.
John, your mic's going out.
Thank goodness.
That's oh, it's working now.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, can you hit the play there, buddy, while you're at it?
Will you say please? I have feelings like the next guy.
Okay.
Please.
Duly noted.
Please. Thank you.
Don't mention it.
Have to do the whole production every
look
time.
Look at this. What are we looking at here?
Milano Live Club.
Milan. October 30th.
What they call it? Clubbo?
2016.
Labyrinth.
It's a labyrinth, man. Oh, shit.
I love me some Labyrinth.
Already looking good, dude.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Blu-ray action.
Return to Live, Holmes.
Fuck yeah. There they are. Been digging these dudes for over 20 years, I think.
Yeah, we've been fans of theirs for a long time.
I think we discovered them back in college.
That last record they put out was really strong, too.
Yeah, that's the thing. They've always been pretty good. And I don't know how much lineup change they've gone through.
You know what? I don't know either. That's a band where if you asked me to name one guy, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, exactly. And then what are they, like Italian or something?
Yeah, they're Italian.
Yeah.
One of the first Italian kind of progressive.
Right, right. And they've just kind of been silently or quietly sort of doing their thing.
Yeah.
Knocking shit out for years now. And you don't think much of it. And then you... See, what is that, a dude or a chick? I don't know. Then you
at least
see,
it's a dude.
Then you see him and then live like this, and you just go, "Holy fuck, that's right! These dudes are awesome."
He's like, "You know what? We're returning to live."
Oh no, it's all about it, mate.
So where's the singer, guys? He one of the guitarists?
That would be awesome.
Is it me or is that pretty bassy?
Super bassy. Here he comes.
Oh, here we go.
I've got my little jacket.
No, we, what was it, the Return to Heaven Denied? Denied. Okay, yeah. Sounds a little bit better now. A little bassy in the beginning, though.
I like how they, how the Italian rockers tend to vary, they tend to go between being super fucking, like, classy, like with the white puffy shirt, you know, like this kind of thing. Or they go like homeboy on bass, where they just look like a fucking truck driver.
No shit.
It's like they just run the gamut. They can be anything in between.
Well, he's got that little, what, pirate jacket
or whatever. He's got the total, little fucking, like a little military style jacket with like 1,000 buttons on it.
He's like, let's go pirate, right?
Plus he's got, like, look, he's got the super mullet thing working where it's like, let's fucking business in the front, party in the back, Holmes.
Exactly.
With a major party happening in the back.
He's got like that homeboy Mark Strachey hair.
They look like they're rocking it. They look now. Totally. See, those look like some fairly young dudes on guitar. So, I mean, the guy on the right looks like he might be an older dude. And that singer definitely looks like an older dude.
Yeah.
So does the drummer.
They can't be that old. What, did they come out in the 90s?
But think about it. They came out in the 90s, which is 20 years ago.
So and they're probably...
And they're at their earliest, they're maybe 20.
40s, maybe?
So, yeah, in their 40s, or 50s? I would say.
40s, early 50s?
Yeah, something like that. About our age, really.
Well, yeah, I remember there was like a little kind of a surge of Italian metal bands coming out at the time. But
big time.
They were our favorite.
Yeah.
Still one of my favorite Italian.
One that I really dug. They were called like House of Evil, or they were fucking badass. They sounded like Queensryche.
Oh, I know you. Not House of
Not House of Cards or something, but it's like something like that. It seemed like House of Spirits.
House of Spirits. That's it. That's yeah, it. Yeah.
They were badass. What remember
happening? Oh yeah. I don't know.
That one album they did, I was like, this is like pure fucking Queensryche, dude. It sounded kick ass.
It didn't. was it you?
Was it what?
DGM.
DGM?
They're Italian too, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're fucking awesome.
Simone Maleroni.
Yeah. Oh, remember that concert we watched from them?
Fuck yeah,
that
dude.
That thing was incredible, dude, man.
Because Homeboy is the fucking master. Because Simone, the guitarist, he fucking like produces half the fucking prog bands in Europe, it seems.
Oh, really?
Like. He's a bad motherfucker.
Just in Italia or just everywhere?
Certainly in Italy, but even I think in other bands like you know, farther north, like German and stuff bands, I think he's produced as well.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy. He's the go-to dude for fucking prog.
Nice.
European prog metal, dude. And it just sounds fucking like classic Dream Theater from like the 90s, dude. It's killer shit.
Well, I love the Labyrinth. I think I actually played a song not too long ago from them.
They're basically like the Italian Angra, basically, right?
Yeah, a little
or
bit just like that.
Classic,
but
sort of gallopy, badass sort of, not necessarily prog, but definitely a killer fucking kind of power metal.
Power metal with a little bit more.
Maiden-esque kind of beat to it. I love that kind of shit.
What do you think? Should we play something a little bit more old or something newer?
Let's go old, just to give them an idea of what we were listening to, what got us into these dudes, and like why we've got a big following for these guys.
Okay, I got you, man. I think we should do something off Return to Heaven Denied. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Let's do, tell you what, we'll do a little DC here, and we'll be back.
Escape from reality. And if it is lonely now,
there's some rippage horns.
All the shred, dude. On his little seven string or whatever that is.
He's like, you make fun of me, mate. I'll show you.
I know. I'm going to show you the solo, huh?
No shit.
They're all just fun. They all talk like Mario.
Mario.
It's me, Mario.
No
I'm
shit.
I'm playing the Praga band.
I play the Praga.
The Pragatini.
Pragatini.
That's what they call it. Not even hiding the racism, Holmes.
Oh,
straight up racism.
Well, I tell you what, I'm thirsty, and I'm very, very, very excited about this guy.
I was going to say, you've been teasing some good beers, so I can't wait, dude.
Let's do it. Mr. G. We got a cork over here.
Lay it on.
I might have to do a little something extra for you folks. Hold on. Sounds like they're singing Volare. Volare.
That would have been awesome.
Oh, don't die.
Oh. Let's see. Who are we talking with here? What brewery is this? This here is from Stone Brewery, as you said, but it's one of their small batch Escondido beers, which means they go a little special with it. So while it is in your typical 22 ounce or 0.9 fluid ounce bottles, this is the Stone Espresso Imperial Russian Stout that's been aged in bourbon barrels, son, the 2017 series, and it's 13.5% alcohol, dude.
What?
They're not fucking around. So as homeboy Shreds over there with
Labyrinth,
we're gonna get this guy kicked off. The bottle looks like classic Stone, where they take their nice dark bottles or dark brown bottles and they do what basically looks like they're painting it on there.
That's one of the nicer Stone bottles I've ever seen.
This
was
like a picture of a cat or something.
And it was corked.
And it was corked, and you fucked it up and broke the cork off.
And you're cheating.
I'm not cheating. I barely smell it. I think I smelled my own mustache, so it's all right.
No shit.
And so we've got it. I mean, let's see what we've got. I mean, how dark is this guy? That's like pitch black.
Yeah.
I get nothing through that.
Pretty beer though. I see all the soapy lacing.
Yeah, no,
really nice.
Just kind of light and kind of watery, I think you would say, right?
I have to smell it first.
Oh, no, that's how you tell. Okay, but I'll give it.
Oh my god!
I'll give it a four on the appearance.
Four on smell too, or aroma.
Damn, dude, it smells awesome. Yeah, that's cool.
I'm excited.
A lot of nice chocolate in there. I like.
God, it smells like just deep dark chocolate, doesn't it?
Yeah, dude, I can't wait. That's a four.
Here, cheers.
Here goes the taste. Fuck me, dude.
Holy
fuck. Get the trumpets out, dude. Holy
it's
shit.
Like that somebody melted a chocolate bar
exactly.
And just put it in our glass.
This is ridiculous.
Oh, my God. This is good.
This is cigar beer.
It's
like they engineered a cigar beer. It's like the $6 million man. They said, how can we make the ultimate beer for a cigar?
Yeah.
And they started from this.
Oh, well done, Stone.
Fuck yeah.
Well
dude.
Done. This I don't even have to rate anything else. Yeah, this is a 4.
This is outstanding, dude. All
fuck,
the way.
Yeah.
A fucking 5 or something. After
dude, this is the best beer of 2018 so far.
Yes.
My opinion.
I'll definitely say that. As homeboy
fucking balls
off, dude. That's crazy how high that dude gets up.
No shit,
never heard
dude.
Dude sing
I don't remember that, do you?
No, not at all. It must be. That's why I figured this is probably a new dude. But the dude's got the. He's got
he
the
looks
chops.
Older, though.
It could be. They maybe found an old dude.
He's like, I got me ripped jeans, right? Those help me sing better. They. He's got a little pull strap. You see when he screams super high? He goes behind his back and pulls a strap up.
Yeah.
No shit. He's I'm a puppet to me bulls.
Or he's got something where he can just like pull a string and it causes like a little vice in his pants to squeeze his nuts.
Squeeze his nuts.
Holy fuck, that's a great beer, dude. And you know it's going to get better as it warms up.
Hey, guys.
So, yeah.
funny you should mention that. I have a new jock in process. You know what? You know what?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He's still talking. He doesn't even know what's going on.
He's very excited about
it. He's looking a little confused. He's like, why are they talking while I'm talking?
Why am I not throwing him off?
No shit.
He's still talking. That's what's amazing. He's still thinking, what if I just push on through?
Well, he looks a little frustrated right now, but he'll get over that.
He's getting it out.
So, just look up to him and just kind of nod your head.
Yeah, he's just kind of like, oh, yeah. Like, no shit.
Oh, he's all smiles now.
He thinks everything's fine. He goes, oh, good, this is working.
Oh, fuck. He found the button. Hold on.
And that's what I was talking about.
Well, that sounds reasonable, dude.
Yeah, John.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, guys. John, we're going to get back to it.
Yeah.
Appreciate you guys giving me a little airtime, a little bit to talk here. I appreciate that.
Dude, we would.
Anytime, bud.
We could do nothing less for you.
I tell you what, before we jump into topic, how about we jump into some new Judas Priest off the Firepower record?
Good choice.
Dude, what a solid fucking record. We hadn't really talked about this, but I have to say, probably the best Priest record since Painkiller.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah. Would you say that?
That's kind of what it reminds me of.
Yeah, it's great. Great.
You know, you didn't know quite what to expect. It could have easily been kind of a dud, but they came out swinging, and it sounds pretty damn good.
I tell you what, let's do Rising from Ruins. Killer tune.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Paizan, you got a topic over there before you fall asleep.
Yeah, you know, it occurred to me because I was reading about the Ramones recently. I didn't know this, but apparently Joey and Johnny absolutely despised each other, and it mostly stemmed. I mean, one of the biggest problems is that they were both politically at odds. I think Joey was the staunch Republican. And Johnny was the like ideal liberal.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, they really clashed. And just the more they talked, the more they just sort of pissed each other off. And it even culminated in Johnny having a girlfriend that ended up breaking up with him, and then ending up with Joey. I think she actually married him.
Really?
That pissed him off. So anyway,
yeah, I don't think that those type of things go too well.
And also, too, what I don't know is, I think if you don't read about it or see something obvious on stage, like them throwing shit at each other or giving each other the finger or something, growing up, I never knew that anybody in any band didn't like. I just assumed, why wouldn't they all like each other? I was like, we're all playing together. Obviously, we must be friends. No, I wasn't naive enough to think they're all hanging out at each other's houses and playing Atari or something, but I figured they could at least get along with each other. I mean, if you're an artist, I figure you know, you're, it's one of the differences between being an artist and being just any other regular hump that goes to work day in and day out, is that you get to do what you want to do when you want to do it.
Yeah.
So basically meaning that if I don't like any of the dickheads I work with, I can just say, you know what, I'm out. I'm going to start my own band somewhere else. I mean, you know what I mean? Because you have all the freedom to do things when the hell you want, where the hell you want, and why the hell you want, you know, for that matter.
It's, right.
And so I figured, I just assumed he had that choice too. And there was, you know, pictures and stuff of, I mean, some of these things get really bad where people just end up all just, you know, in fights and stuff. They hate each other so much. I think, didn't the guys at Guns N' Roses, like, throw shit at each other, like chairs and stuff or something?
Well, yeah, there was a lot of animosity in the band for years. Yeah. I mean, Steven Adler, for some reason, still, well, not for some reason, still gets kind of pigeonholed or kind of left out of the shuffle for this last reunion and stuff. He got to play a couple of gigs where he did a couple of guest spots and stuff like that. But his, I think, was mainly due to just extreme drug addiction back in the day. But they were all fucked up. Right. But I think Steven took it to a new level.
But just the idea that people just say, look, we're in a band like ZZ Top you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that they just basically can't stand each other.
Yeah, yeah, they all
ride in their own separate tour bus.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is, you know, that's a, what do you call it? You know, that's a drain on some of the money they could be making. You know, it's going to go to paying for extra buses and shit that they normally wouldn't have to pay.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they're not required to all be in the same bus, but it just... I just made me think, it's like, how do you know when a band is doing, unless you read about it, how do you know, what are there any signs of it? And certainly there's a lot of talk, there's always has been, about how some of the worst sort of animosities and problems between band members have made for the best music.
Well, I'll tell you a perfect example. We've talked about it many times on the show, but Fair Warning by Van Halen.
Uh-huh.
Eddie fucking hated Dave during that record, and from what we talked about, apparently didn't like Michael Anthony very well during that time, and probably the most aggressive guitar-driven Van Halen record ever.
And see, I wonder, it's like, well, I can't argue about whether the music would be better or not better based on whether they liked each other. I think certainly it's a strong emotion to hate people, and so emotions can really drive art, I suppose, is what that means, but... I don't think it's necessary to make great art. Certainly, there's plenty a lot of... I can't think of the opposite, where there's bands where everybody super loved each other.
Mm-hmm.
But surely there are some. And I don't know if you can judge qualitatively and say, well, clearly, this music made by people who liked each other is much better than this music by people who hate each other. You know, I don't think you can
right.
judge that. You just either like it or you don't. But my thing is, how does that... That dude's really singing his balls off. It's like... How does that happen? Why yeah. does it happen? And does it really affect the fan? Like, for instance, like I said, until you told me, I'd never heard of anybody in a band hating each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think anything of it. I just assumed, like I said, because you're volunteering to be here, because you're a rock star or whatever, one assumes you enjoy working with these people. I'm not saying you have to be in love with them or be best friends, but I wouldn't have thought you'd hated each other. Why would you... voluntarily be in a job that you hate the guy you work with?
Well, I think when it starts off in the beginning, these guys are friends, and you know, they're making it.
Sure,
and then
sours them.
Yeah, as time goes on, then you know they can grate on each other at some point. And maybe that's what happened with ZZ Top. I don't know. I know if you think about Motley Crue, there's another one where if it weren't for Nikki Sixx, they wouldn't have had that reunion and all that stuff.
Right.
But... Tommy and Vince came to blows in the airport.
Wow.
Over some shit. I think they resented Vince when he got in the car wreck when he was drunk driving and killed those people, as well as the drummer for Hanoi Rocks, Razzle.
Razzle Dazzle.
I mean, shit, they were getting ready to replace his ass, and then he, being the rock star, he got off for the most part for manslaughter and DWI. But when they kicked him out after Dr. Feelgood, which was kind of crazy just for the fact that the band was at the top of the game at the time.
Right.
Then they did a great record with Karabi, but that was a very ugly split.
Yeah, that's the thing. It seems like a lot of these, when you hear about it, it's not just a, oh, I'd rather, you know, not be around the guy, or I really don't like the way he talks or whatever. It's, I hate that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. It's like a really strong feeling. And you just wonder, first of all, how the hell did it even get to that point? And
yeah.
Second of all,
what happens?
Are there really no steps one can take to prevent that shit? Just sort of, let's keep these guys from hating each other. Like from the beginning, you know, let's make sure everybody likes each other. If there's any tensions, you know, this is where the manager should step in and say, you know, you guys, let's back off.
Come on, boys, get along over there.
Let's fix it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it just festers and gets worse, and they're just like, and then, like we said, it kind of seems to drive the music. But I'm betting there's probably examples where the band didn't necessarily have a hit album while they hated each other.
Yeah.
And they ended up just breaking up, and that was that. It didn't necessarily end up hunky-dory for everybody.
Sure. And there's bands like that, too. But, I mean, going back to the crew for a minute, they did that reunion tour. They called it quits. And I think after that was over, I think I heard Vince Neil say he hadn't heard from anybody.
How long had that been?
What, has it been a year or two since Crew's been done?
Oh, okay.
But he was a hired gun. When he came back to Crew, he was on contract.
Okay.
So he...
You had no reason to expect that necessarily would go.
He's anything. Done. So, or he's a hired gun at that point. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so... a lot of animosity, and not being brought back in as a full member. I mean, the whole reason they had their success when it was because he came back, and that's why they all made tons of bread.
Right.
So
there's always the nostalgia thing. The fans dig it and all that stuff. I mean, we can keep going. There's the Beatles.
Go ahead.
Look at the Beatles. I mean, John and Paul, as much as they got along and wrote well together, it's like they a lot of times just fucking hated each other. And I know that a lot of people want to put it all on Yoko, and there's some debate as to whether it really was her fault, you know, alone, or whether it was a combination of factors, and she was just one of many factors. The point is, it's like, you know, I don't think you'd have anything without Lennon and McCartney as a group. So, you can say what belonged to who.
And maybe a little of it's getting all that fame so quickly, too, you know? In being Beatles... perfect example of being caught in a shell, so to speak, where they can't do shit without people up their ass 24/7. So maybe you're so frustrated about your situation at that point that you kind of lash out on each other. But I think in the Beatles case, and I don't know this, but you know, maybe it came down to some of the wives. I know Linda McCartney was really, I guess, kind of a headstrong person, as well as Yoko. And with both those influences, I mean, Paul didn't bring Linda to the studio that we've seen footage of, at least. But I got that Let It Be movie. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's pretty interesting to seeing them kind of create. And, you know, they all seem irritated for the most part. Except for Ringo's, it's kind of like, I'm just hanging here.
He's like, I don't care. I'm just happy to be out of the house.
It sounds like I'm hitting tin cans over here.
Mentioned a shitty little production of the drums, as always.
But another one, I mean, if you think about Van Halen. You know, you had Roth. Eddie never really liked Roth that much. And, you know, I've heard that Ted Templeman was like, this kid can't sing. But he's got the appeal. He's got the audience. So I almost wonder, you know, of course he got in the band. And he got, you know, asked to be in the band because of his PA and stuff like that. But then he got so good with the stage performance and his persona, it's kind of hard to get rid of a guy because he's part of the draw at that point, right? So I think Ted Templeman said, well, I got to get this kid, use his strengths when he's on how he sings, and make that into a thing. And at that point, you know, two or three albums down the line, Ross is sex symbol for all the women. Eddie can't really say, God, I got to get rid of this fucking guy, you know, until Roth, you know, flips out and wants to be an actor, whatever happened there. Then Eddie and Hagar are best buds until that goes south. Now, they're at odds. They hate each other. Well, partly because of Sammy's book, too. But I don't know. It's interesting. Like you said, how do you build up so much animosity to a guy you called your brother at one point, you know, in the band situation?
I hear you. Well, this is where I was going with this, and that is I think that there's a couple aspects to this. One of them is, do you ever, like I said, until you told me about ZZ Top, for instance, never once did I notice any sort of weirdness with the band.
I
didn't sense any tension, none of that. And not even on an album. I mean, even less of a chance, right? Because you're just hearing the music.
Right.
And the music doesn't have a sound, per se, as far as animosity or whatever. So, does it really affect the band? I mean, the fans. And two, is there ever any point to talking about it, bringing it out in the open and saying, look, this is our deal? Because you notice that never seems to happen. They don't come out and just go, look, I hate this guy for this reason, and I think maybe if he can just apologize about this, we can get along. You know what I mean? It's like they just kind of go, fuck that guy, and it lasts for like decades.
Oh, well, I mean, look at Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
Yeah.
Keith Richards will talk all sorts of shit about how he hates Mick Jagger, but when you see him on stage together, it's like, wow, they're best buds. I mean, they're actors in a sense.
Right, and yeah, and certainly more so than your average other kind of, I mean, non-acting sort
right.
of artistic profession. That's very theatrical to be on stage and do all that sure. stuff, so it's kind of close to acting. But like I said, when we saw ZZ Top, if you hadn't told me that, I never would have suspected it.
Yeah.
They get on and they do their little gig and they leave. Unless you're like fucking Axl Rose, who can't fucking be put out to do anything. He just gets pissed at every fucking thing that happens and walks off stage. But I guess I'm wondering, is it at all, not beneficial, it's not the right word, but how does it affect the fans? Do you think that it makes it any enjoyable, less enjoyable, more enjoyable, or anything like that? I know it's, like I say, again, it's hard to say.
I would say, I mean, back in the day, you would maybe read about it in a magazine or something like that. But when we were growing up in the golden age of hard rock and heavy metal, you just want everybody to get along. You just assumed everybody was big buddies. You see the videos, they're all clowning around
right.
and shit like that. And, I mean, I remember, when Robin Crosby from Rat got AIDS, I heard right. stories where they just basically didn't even go visit him. I mean, he was out of the band at that point. He was too sick, to perform. But
right.
just kind of shut him off. I mean, I think the worst part is when it affects the performance.
Right. At have least, you ever been to a show where it did affect the performance?
Any no, sort of luckily no. Well, I've been to one. I saw Kiss on the Lick It Up tour, and I think a lot of people saw this, where Vinnie Vincent and Paul Stanley apparently were at odds with one another.
Oh, shit.
And Vinnie would, like, go on these extended fucking solos that were amazing, and Stanley looked like he wanted to rip his fucking head off. Like, stop yeah. it. Yeah, basically like, hey, you're done. He's trying to get that little the little cane with the little hook on it. It's like, okay, like, you're done. Ding. Yeah, so I've seen that. I know that I think Don Dokken and Lynch have come to blows on the stage
Holy
before.
Fuck.
Or maybe it was Lynch and Pilsen. I don't remember what it was.
You're right, and there was the problem with Queensryche, right? With Jeff Tate and
spitting on the audience. Yeah.
And he just, like I said, it almost seems like, on one hand, for some people at least, it's like, wow, this is career suicide. Why would I do this? Why isn't it in my best interest to get along with everybody, to let this gig go? You think Nita, as we were just watching with Alice Cooper earlier, a while back, that she ever says, let's shit get personal? She just kind of says, fuck it, this is a job. I'm here to do my job.
Yeah.
He's the boss. Just like the way Zach would always talk about Ozzy. He's like, he's the boss, whatever the boss says.
Those are different situations, though.
Yeah.
They're hard guns, basically. It's the Ozzy Osbourne band. It's the Alice Cooper band.
Oh, I see. It's not really their band
right.
to be part of. It's.
But that said, if you look at a winger, that's a band.
Sure.
That's everybody seems to really like each other and get along well.
Yeah. Even bringing back old dudes, as we saw.
Yeah.
Back to the band. Remember when we saw
him? Paul Taylor came back. And we never talked about that show. We'll have to get into that here in a few minutes.
Okay.
But if you think about... Let me think. I was about to go somewhere.
You know what I want you to do? Will you do something for me?
What?
Do me a favor. Just kick my ass, okay? Kick this ass for a man, that's all. Kick my ass. No. Enjoy. Come on. I'm not asking, I'm telling with this. Kick my ass.
The right to rock.
You took a detour. You're like, hey, here's a rest stop. I'm going to stop take a piss.
Take a left turn. Maybe we should go to a song so I can try to remember that
straight.
Thought. You got anything in mind?
I like the idea of some of the Dokken stuff. Throw
awesome.
Out a nice Dokken tune out there for you.
Hell yeah, what do you want to play?
Let's do a little It's Not Love.
Nice. We'll be right back. I love old Dokken.
Exactly.
But no, where I was going with that before I had the brain lapse, I think I'm sad because my beer's almost done. It's so fucking good. That shit's good. So if you look at the Ozzy Osbourne band, it's interchangeable for the most part.
True.
Except for the guitar player. The guitar player is the only real focal point.
Yeah, you
Who's playing bass in Ozzy right now?
Wouldn't even.
Who's playing drums? I don't have a clue. I don't know. Back in the day, though, Rudy Sarzo, Tommy Aldridge, Randy Rhoads. Right. Randy Rhoads dies, Rudy leaves, and there's a cast of characters. But it was always the focus of Ozzy, guitar player. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and same with like Alice Cooper.
Well, Cooper, same thing. Interchangeable members at all points. The focus typically is going to be on who's playing guitar.
Hired gun on the guitar, right.
Right, right, exactly.
And you can have more than one.
Exactly, exactly. So I'm trying to think of another artist where you think of the singer as well as a guitar player, and everybody else is kind of interchangeable. You think of anybody else off the top? Oh, I mean, you think of David Bowie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, he had some Reeves Gabrels was awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to get killed for this one. Again, the beer's fucking with my head. Mick Ronson. Mick Ronson and Bowie. Yeah, yeah.
This is fucking phenomenal, by the way.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, so there's those guys that have the name. But a different, if you think about that, we had their winger, which is, you know, four individual guys that you know very well.
Right.
You think of Bon Jovi. Back in the day, it was Sambora. You knew all the guys in the band.
Right.
Now it's Richie Sambora. Richie Sambora's gone.
I was going to say, and he hasn't been in there a while.
Alex John Such is gone. The bass player's been with them, I heard, since like the... He played on like some of the early demos, and then Hugh McDonald, I think's his name. And then they got Alec John Such, who lasted, I think, till around Keep the Faith. And then Sambora's been gone about a couple years. Now they got a guy named Phil X. He's in that fucking video of Sony, Hired Gun thing. He's a Hired Gun now, technically. Yeah.
Hired Gun, right.
Other guys are full-fledged members at this point, but... it's kind of an interesting dynamic to where some bands are pretty interchangeable with people. I mean, right.
And so that's why you have to wonder then. It's like, all right, then if that can happen with so many bands, to varying degrees of success, obviously, does it really matter then, let's say you have something like Guns N' Roses and you get somebody like Slash and somebody like Axl Rose, two big personalities. They clash so much that they're just like, I can't fucking do this. In fact, I think it was 19 years went by before Slash even would talk to Axl.
And I think it's more the other way around. More on the Axl side, where Slash was kind of open to it, but Axl was like, nah, I'm not feeling it.
Such an ego on that dude. But I guess where it sort of segues into is, again, does this really affect the music? Does it affect the fan? The music, like I said, I mean, anybody can go out there, learn a bunch of licks, and, you know, as a hired gun, as you say, and say, I can fill in and play this part, you know, and come in and do this. Anyone who's ever played in Megadeth, it's sort of the thing, right? Is that they come in and go, all right, it looks like I'm going to have to learn all this Marty Friedman stuff. And so Broderick came in and learned all the fucking Friedman lines note for note, I think. And then later on, as he got, you know, proved himself, was allowed, I think, to sort of embellish and throw his own little bit of, you know, a spice into it. But the point is, it's like eventually, you know, a guitarist will come in, do some stuff, put their own stamp in. They end up leaving at some point for whatever reason. And then some other guy comes in and he has to learn that guy's licks and the other guy's licks, everyone previous.
Right. But again, it's that focus of that guitar player. But I would say Megadeth's a little bit different because Elfsid's a pretty big part of that band as well.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When it comes to the drummer, though, more of an anomaly. It's more of, okay, any guy could kind of step in that spot, you know? Or even think about an Anthrax where, you know, you had Dan Spitz. It's not the greatest guitar player. I mean, it's cool to see him when he was in the band, but that's kind of an interchangeable role.
Right.
Your main focus is Scott Ian, Joey Belladonna, right. Frank Bello, and Charlie Benanti.
Right.
Now you got the guitar player. I always forget his name, the guy from Shadows Fall. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember because he's got like a funky name, a simple name.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean.
But another classic band where you would never know there was a problem until it came out in the press, Cheap Trick with Boone Carlos. Didn't know that they had problems until one day Bunny's not back there anymore.
Right. And that's why I say what I was kind of getting at is that if you do have problems in the band and they say, okay, well, you know, let's say, yeah, you hate me tonight or whatever, and we've got a show, and so let's bring in this other dude, and he does it. And if they play it well enough, I mean, like I said, I don't think anyone's doing anything so amazing, especially these older bands like Cheap Trick or whatever, where you can't be replaced even just temporarily. Pretty hard to replace Rick Nielsen, obviously. You can get someone to play the licks, but he's such a big personality.
Oh, yeah. In the backing sort of the vocals. He's a big part of the backing vocals. Yeah. I'm huge on backing vocals, as you know.
So that may be an issue. But otherwise, like, if you change the bass player in ZZ Top, sonically, I don't think you'd know the difference, right?
And sonically,
no. It's not to shit on Dusty Hill at all.
Well, no.
And obviously, live, it's a different story. I mean, that's the part of the look. The
and
two beards,
Dusty sings.
Right, and that kind of stuff. So, but as far as music goes, in other words, like I said, it's like, is it really such a big deal that these guys can't get along? You could replace some of these guys pretty easily. Obviously, the major one, like Eddie Van Halen, you can't replace Eddie Van Halen in Van Halen and think that everyone's going to be cool with it. Obviously, it would never work for various reasons. But
look at Foreigner. Mm-hmm. It's Mick Jones and a bunch of hired guns.
Yeah.
For the most part.
And that's, and that happens in other bands too, you're right, where it's just stuff was so weird that there's no way to sort of overcome that because you've got so many different people with such big personalities or people that have such a unique sound or voice that you can't really easily replace them.
Right.
And gosh, I guess, I mean, obviously the obvious answer is, gosh, why can't we all just get along, right? It's like,
sure.
Could you guys just iron this out? But whatever it is, it's usually something that's been brewing for decades.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like one of the guys just says, I've had enough of this shit. And I don't have to do it anymore if I don't want to. And I'm betting there's a little bit of it's like, yeah, and if I leave, what are you motherfuckers going to do about it? Like, this is going to fuck all y'all if I leave because I'm a big part of this band.
Right.
Well, ego, in other words, is a little part of it.
I don't think the Poison guys really like each other that much anymore either. Really? I'm not 100% on that, but...
And that's the thing.
I get the point that Brett Michaels is like, hey, I can do whatever the fuck I want.
I'm Brett fucking Michaels.
Right, look but, at this I mean, thing. His solo career... Let's face it.
That's why I think it's funny. It's like, really?
Oh, I think it's the ego. He had the little TV
Brett
show.
Michaels, yeah.
Yeah. Like he's got the name. He could go out and play... He's a voice of Poison. And so you know, he's got that, but...
But then, I mean, look at... He's the voice of Journey. And they got this other dude in there. Could sound like him.
But I'll tell you what. I've never wanted to go see Brett Michaels by himself, but I'm going to go see Poison.
Yeah.
And I think some of these guys think they're bigger than the band that made them who they are.
Right. And that's why I say it's like, I don't know how this is productive. Like, I guess eventually you get tired of anybody. And like I said, in the music business, it's different than having an actual regular job where you go to work and it's kind of like, this is my bread and butter. You know, in the music business, you're an artist and you're expressing yourself and you're like, I don't have to do this shit if I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do something else. I've got money from all these record sales that I can that I probably invested in other things.
Right.
And so it's funny that they, I don't know, do it at all. My point, I guess one of the things I started off wanted to talk about is that I have to admit that, like you said, you told me about the ZZ Top. I couldn't tell. Once they got on stage, I couldn't tell that they don't like each other. What was going to tell me that?
Nobody.
As opposed to the poor people that were at whatever that fucking rock fest was, where Jeff Tate was like flipping off the audience.
I think it's Rocklahoma.
Yeah, that's where it's like, okay, I think there's a problem here.
No shit.
So it's like, you know, unless it gets to that point, how do you know? My thing is, it's like, dude, it's like, why does it have to get to that point, man? It's like, you're a fucking rock star.
Yeah.
Was your life really that shitty? I mean, what is this guy doing that's so horrible that you can't deal with it?
I think part of it goes to the fact where these bands get to a certain level and they get all these people in their fucking ear. Hey,
okay.
Fuck that guy. He didn't write enough, so he should be making what you're making.
Yeah.
And so I think there's these outside influences that come in and destroy...
That's a good point.
...relationships
within
these bands.
Yeah, a lot of times, like the girlfriend, like fucking...
Or it's a woman.
...with the chick.
It's something like that. It's either a girl thing where I mean, look at Ritzy Cossing when he fucked Ricky Rocket's girlfriend and became his girlfriend, or I don't know. I don't think they got married, but I mean, that got him an instant boot.
The boot.
out of the band, where I think he could have done pretty well with. But look at Mr. Big. How long did Billy Sheehan and Eric Martin not get along?
I forgot about that. I remember there was some thing that happened, and I think Paul was sort of like in the middle. Like,
Paul's like, I can't take it anymore. I'm out of here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mom and dad won't quit fighting, so I'm out of here.
Don't go to my room.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's weird. And I guess that's part of why there were still some problems when they were trying to make that one album. And Eric was like, when you guys going to send me some shit? Maybe that was some of those old tensions coming back there, where it's like, same shit, I don't know why I come back here.
Well, I think Eric's frustration sits with, hey guys, let's make Mr. Big number our top priority. And everybody's like, no, I got like 10 other priorities.
Exactly, I've got all these other bands I'm in.
Mr. Big's my priority for 6 to 9 months. After that, I have a new priority waiting on me. So how real vested are they in? I think that was Eric saying. It's like, this is my thing.
Right.
I could go do solo stuff and stuff like that. No, I want Mr. Big. I'm vested in this. I don't feel like everybody is as vested in this as much as I am, mm-hmm. with the exception of maybe Pat. But Pat was, you know, sick. But I think he was probably on the same page with Eric. So right. Paul's like, I got solo shit going on. Billy's like, I've got 30 other bands I'm playing with right now. So I'll make time when there's time.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, I guess certainly that's not something we can solve or even talk about solving. I mean, whatever their differences are, they're various, and it's something for them to work out. And they may never work it out, realistically.
Yeah.
They may just go, fuck it, we'll just do this. It just seems like it's already stressful enough to be in a job somebody don't like. Imagine where it's like, we could quit this. I mean, like, ZZ Top probably has enough money. They don't have to tour. So wonder, why would they tour when they hate each other?
Yeah.
What would be the point of it? And us fans are appreciative because we dig seeing ZZ Top, but then it kind of did when you found out about any of these bands.
Bummed out.
I mean, you get bummed out. Does it change your opinion about, do you want to see them live now anymore? Or?
It doesn't affect me.
Okay,
it's like, as long as they put on a good show and their animosity towards each other doesn't affect the show, then I'm fine.
How would you feel if that did happen? You're at one of the concerts and just all of a sudden you can see Billy Gibbons walk over to Dusty, and you can see he's telling something in his ear like, you
go
need to
fuck
cut
yourself.
Your fucking bullshit out. I'm sick of you, dude. And he just kind of looks at him like, fuck. He throws the bass down and walks off or something. You'd feel like all awkward, like, oh, shit.
I was like, give me my fucking money back.
You'd be pissed about it?
Yeah, I would. Wouldn't you?
Because that's the thing.
Halfway through the show?
Because that's the thing. You feel like, look, dude, I paid some money for you guys to do this.
A lot of money these
days.
And
I don't, I mean, if I can't tell and you hate each other, but you still play the music and I dig it, what do I give a shit?
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're ruining my experience with your little bullshit, it's like, that's not cool.
I think it's what it all boils down to.
Wow.
We're the paying customers. We're the guys that, you know, pay these guys salaries.
Dance monkey.
Yeah. So we basically say, hey, if you're going to act like an asshole, then I don't want to come see you anymore. I'm not going to pay you to see you. And I think bands like Motley Crue got it. They're like, you know what? We can't do it without the four of us.
Yeah.
There's Van Halen to an extent.
Led to them saying, you know what? Let's just do a final tour.
Yeah.
Let's not keep doing this till we can't fucking stand each other.
Let's make a shit ton of money.
Let's knock this out. Make some
cash
and be done with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can respect that.
So, I don't think they've written off the idea of maybe doing a record, but the last few records were shit.
Yeah, there's a point where it's like, that's a separate story where it's like, you're just sucking. I don't give a shit whether you hit each other.
Just like Poison. I mean, I'm not going to buy another Poison record.
Right.
Everything they put out since CC was out of the band has been shitty. So, I mean, since he's come back. I mean, the stuff with Kotsen was good and Blue Star Center. We talked about this a few shows ago.
Right.
That stuff was pretty good, but it's like they can't fucking write music anymore.
Yeah, and it's too bad. Well, all right. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's much more to explore about this topic, but it was an interesting idea.
Oh, I think so.
Just because, like I said, I honestly, unless somebody tells me or I read an article, I got no idea what's going on. And I honestly, people talk about it, but I couldn't tell the difference. If I listened to the first Van Halen album versus the, what was it, Women and Children First, you said, was the height of their dislike for each other?
I would say Fair Warning.
Fair Warning, that's it. I can't tell the difference in the music and go, oh, well, this music clearly has more you know, angst behind it or more power behind it, which is clearly attributable to their feelings about each other. Mm-hmm. Some bullshit. Like that. It's like it just sounds like Van Halen. It's like I dig this song.
Yeah.
I also dig this song, and I also dig this song.
Oh,
and,
I
you know, for different reasons or whatever.
I will tell you this: when I read this article about how much they hated each other, it just freaked me out. I was like, wow, they really hate each other that much? Because back in the day, you see the old interviews, they're all fucked up half the time. Mm-hmm. But they seem like, oh, we're all buddies, blah, blah, blah. And then you find out later they hate each other. It's kind of a bumming effect.
Yeah, because you kind of feel like I was lied to or something.
But then you listen to some of their product after that, and you're like, God, I wish they would start hating each other again. Because apparently when Eddie's pissed off, he fucking writes some killer shit, man.
And so, and that's not necessarily, I bet, true with every single artist. So maybe there's some music of these bands that we've talked about where you're like, oh, well, in their angry period, I didn't like their music, as opposed to I did like it. I mean, I can't think of any particularly, but, I mean, it's just too bad. Did the guys in Iron Maiden hate each other at any time? I know they weren't playing together for a little while.
I don't know what happened. But I didn't know that they were hating Adrian, each other. I think Adrian just wanted... creatively wanted to do more.
Oh, okay.
And
which happens, I think, to everybody. And then Bruce went off and did some stuff on his own for a while.
Yeah, and
it wasn't
because
he was thrown out of the band, was it?
No, he left on his own, and I'm not sure if he did that based on, hey, I just want to do something on my own for a little while and try something new.
I want to be Bruce.
But look, ever since they've come back, they seem super happy, and Maiden's just been a nonstop
on
force.
Fire, dude,
probably the biggest metal band in the world.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, aside of, like, Metallica, but... Don't get me started on them. I think... never mind. I won't go there.
That's a whole other show.
But globally, Maiden, I think, may be the biggest metal band in the world.
Yeah, I think probably so. And rightly so.
Well, how about Mr. G kicks us into a classic?
Like...
All right, man, I'm going to pull something based off kind of what we've been talking about. I'm going to pull from one of the bands that we've had some conversation about. I'm going to pull off an unlikely record. You're going to like, why'd you pull it off there? And I'm going to tell you why.
Son of a bitch.
I don't know. No. Actually, this came up on the iPod a few months back. I was just looking through my collection. I was like, fuck, man. I want to see if I like this record now. Sure enough, I put it in. I was like, fuck, this was a lot better than I thought it was. And it's Van Halen's Balance record. No. The last one with Hagar.
Yeah, yeah.
The song Don't Tell Me What Love Can Do. It's really cool, kind of heavy riff. I think it's a little more melodic and stuff like that. But a killer tune, man. So I'm going to go with the little VH Hagar era.
Nice.
Let's do it.
It's okay, I do what I want if I choose. I can take the fall as a choice. It's my destiny in my hands. Yeah, it's up to me. I can drive. I can shoot a gun in the streets. Stop me some heroin. I can jump. Feel a sacrifice.
right, Paisan, you get a classic over there.
Oh, yeah. I'm about to blow your fucking mind.
Blow away.
How about a little Vicious Rumors? A little Digital Dictator from back in, like 88, I think that was?
Is somebody blowing somebody?
No. Don't know what you're talking about.
Ragman asked me to blow him away.
I'm doing.
You guys are both fucking pull smokers.
Oh, God. Really,
just
dude?
Calm down, dude.
It's like the pot calling the kettle black.
I was going to say, it's...
What's that supposed to mean?
It's what we call fake news, bro.
What?
Yeah, you're spreading fake news. What are you, Al Jazeera or something over there?
Nose around.
Good one.
You get unemployed.
So what are you going to play over there?
How about Lady Took a Chance?
Fuck yeah. Lady Took a Chance. She really took a chance.
Lady Took a Chance!
So my pick of the week over here, I'm going to go with the Wet.
Wet? Provocative.
No shit. It's W-E-T with, I forget what it means, something, it's like abbreviations for bands. Wheat Toast, that's exactly
big
right.
Big Toast guys.
Jeff Scott Soto, the busiest man in rock and roll.
Nice.
Sings on this thing.
He's your boy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so out now on tour with Sons of Apollo. We'll be seeing here in a few weeks.
Yes, indeedy.
Unless you puss out on that one. If you puss out on that one, you're never going to hear the end of it.
I'm okay with it.
I already got my tickets.
I know, dude. You were all about it.
Dude, I'm not. Watch, there's like 10 people. No. Sons of who?
I know. Some sort of Apollo band.
It's like a Greek band, right?
Is that like at the Apollo Theater?
No shit.
It's some sort of ethnic band.
So Jeff Scott Soto's back with West's brand new record. This one's called, or the name of the record's called Earth Rage. And the track I'm going to pick is called Watch the Fire. You know what? I signed me on guitar, right?
I know, and this motherfucker looks like he came from work. Just took off the jacket and tie and said, oh, I'll play.
Somebody, I don't know if he signed it or somebody else did. They wrote the date on it. Huh. It's kind of smeared, too. Looks like he put some tape or something over it. Yeah. That is a slick-looking guitar there. That homeboy's got the other one, the black one there?
Shaker.
Oh.
Looks like a Shaker.
Yeah, it does, kind of.
Like a 7-string.
Fucking badass, dude.
Nice tone, too.
Oh, I will just go back to this video real quick before Gage does his pick. This video is shot beautifully.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful Blu-ray.
Very nice. I mean, it's like you're in the front row.
Exactly. Yeah. I dig that. Nice editing. Holmes is shredded, Holmes.
Totally. Totally. Love the Labyrinth, man.
Fuck yeah. These guys are rocking. Even Homeboy the truck driver on Rickenbacker Bass.
No shit. He's a monster truck, Holmes.
He's a roadie, Holmes.
Exactly. All right, Paisan, you get a pick over there.
Yeah. We play anything off the new Tesseract yet?
No, we have not.
You didn't have the balls, did you?
I didn't. Like,
I ain't going to do it. Over there is a small box on the dresser in my bedroom. That's where I keep my balls.
Exactly. My wife's got the key, Holmes.
Exactly.
Like, damn it.
It's like, I'm going to get it. Wait till she falls asleep.
Put the moves on her.
Yeah, as you know, our boys who are coming to town soon, I can't fucking wait. I see them in a nice club. They're going to be headlining the Sonder Tour 2018. And in fact, that is the name of their new album, Sonder. Comes out April 20th, 420, Holmes.
Hey, Gigi.
Yo.
Did you know that Johnny and the Jockstaffs were opening?
I did not know that.
I had not heard that either.
Does Tesseract know?
Damn straight they do.
I find it hard to believe.
Johnny Tesseract texted me the other day and said, we need Johnny and the Jockstaffs.
His name's Johnny, too.
Jonathan Quartermain Tesseract. That's his name.
Shit. I'm going to have to check the band liner notes.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe so.
If you were on the inside, you knew he changed his name.
Oh, so yeah, I guess he just gives you the inside scoop because you're such boys.
You got it, Toyota.
I'm starting to get irritated with him tonight.
He's just making fucking sense. Anyway, off of that album, I'm thinking the first single off of there, they got a video for it out. It's called King, so I say you should guys take a spin on that one.
Let's do it. Dude, love the Tesseract, and the time we saw them open up for Megadeth, they were fucking amazing. Fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, we were blown away because totally. Tesseract kicked balls, and I was like, yep, told you. And then after that, Meshuggah came up, and I was impressed with them, too.
Oh, they were fucking awesome.
It was a
awesome,
killer fucking show.
It was.
Like, damn, dude, these guys, it was a rocking evening, that's all I can say.
Yeah, and I was, you were like, dude, let's go. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're like, you bothered me.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm so glad I went, though.
Fuck yeah.
Ended up buying a shirt from Meshuggah, didn't even have any of their shit. And ended up buying Tesseract's album the next day.
Told you, dude. It was a killer fucking band. I really dig their stuff. Live, they really impressed me.
They were badass, for sure.
All right, dude, should we wrap that shit up, B?
We're going to wrap that shit up. We got a great interview coming your way. And before we though let you hear that interview, we want to let you go and give you two big holds up.
This is Jizzy Pearl of Love Hate, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
Guys, you're on live, mano y mano with Ragman and Jizzy Pearl from Love Hate. Give it up, Jizzy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good,
dude. It's awesome to talk to you, man. I'm so happy to hear there's new Jizzy Pearl product as Love Hate, man. It's awesome, and this album really breathes Love Hate. I mean, your voice, of course, but. Kind of take us back to when you left Quiet Riot back in 16 to kind of focus on this record. I know you've been touring, but kind of what was the thought when you left Quiet Riot? And was it just to pursue the solo record?
I did want to do my own thing, and Frontiers called me and asked me if I would like to do a record for them. And I said, yeah. I thought it was a great opportunity to get some new music out, you know, and they're a real record label. They got real distribution, so I was happy.
Well, they've done a lot for, you know, bands from the 80s. I'm an 80s guy, so to see bands coming out, you know, from, like the Bullet Boys, you know, Quiet Riot released their Road Rage not too long ago, Stripers on the label. I mean, a lot of the bands from that era are actually getting a lot of push by Frontiers, and I think it's awesome that everybody's kind of back.
Well, there's a market for that music. I mean, if guys like me didn't have people that wanted to come to shows, you know what I mean, we wouldn't be touring all the time. And all my friends and Warrant and Great White and Bullet Boys and LA Guns, I mean, they tour constantly, all the time. You know what I mean? So there's a total market for the music, and it's a good thing.
Oh, I agree, dude. I agree. And, yeah, like I said, I grew up in that era. So, you know, in the 90s when it wasn't, you know, the thing to go see bands from the 80s, I was there front and center and saw a lot of great shows where bands kind of persevered and kept it up and kept going. I mean, I just talked to Mark Torian the other day, and what he's doing with Bullet Boys now is remotely different from what he was doing back in the day, but the music's relevant and it's really strong. And I gotta say, your new record is really, really strong as well. My hat's off to you for persevering over the years and keeping up the fight, man.
Well, I just, you know, I take stuff seriously. I wanted to make a really good record. I wanted to get as close as I could to my Blackout in the Red Room record, which had that awesome energy. And that's what, you know, I that was my intent anyway. And yeah, I mean, it's a great record. It's a great collection of songs. And I think I'm singing better than I ever have. And yeah, it kicks ass.
Oh, yeah, totally, man. And I got to applaud you, too, man. You have been kind of the go-to guy when a band loses its vocalist. you know, it seems like you've ended up in these, you know, big bands, and you come in, take the reins, and do a really good job. You know, doing, you know, putting out this new record and it being very strong, are you saying, you know what, guys, I'm not interested, I want to do my own thing for a while? Or would you be interested in, if someone called you and say, hey, our vocalist is flaked out, could you join us?
Well, I wouldn't just join any band. I mean, I'm not some guy that wants to, you know what I mean, wants to or needs to go play music with anybody. You know what I mean? I really have to dig the vibe. And LA Guns, I always dug their music, and I dug Tracy's playing, and it was always a pleasure playing with him. And Rat was amazing, you know what I mean, because I got to play with Warren D. Martini. My phone's crapping out, but yeah, I mean, you know, if an opportunity came, why not? Well, I would, guys like me have to wear a few hats, you know what I mean? I know guys that are in bands like mine, you know what I mean, that do two or three different things. It's not only financial, it's because they get to do their own thing, and then they get to play with other people or jam with other people. So it would depend, I guess, on if someone called me and I wanted to do it, and I have to dig the music, you know what I mean? I'm not gonna play with someone if the music sucks, because that's just not what I want to do.
Oh yeah, yeah, I totally get it. And I guess the climate now compared to where it was, you know, many years ago, is a lot of guys are doing a lot of things. So you look like George Lynch is like the poster child for that. He's in a million different things, but then he always circles back to kind of the Lynch Mob thing. And I'm a huge fan of what they've been doing, more modern. I mean, I love the old stuff, but the stuff they've been putting out over the last several years is really solid. But then he'll play with, yeah, Michael Sweet and other guys, so it's kind of cool that I guess you have that vehicle. I kind of miss where, you know, it was all, you know, say four guys in a band and you could guarantee a record every year. But now you kind of get a little more product. I guess the hard part is some of that gets lost in the shuffle if there's too much going on at once, you know.
You know, there's not too many bands that can just do the one band. You know, I think everyone wants to do side projects, because, you know, it's 2018, and everyone's not, you know, physically connected to a major label where the major label would tell them that they couldn't do something, you know, so they just go off and do what they want to do.
Yeah, I guess it gives you guys a lot more freedom to kind of express yourself and not be pinholed to one certain thing where you guys can, you know, do whatever you want, you know, basically. Something I do want to mention real quick before we jump into the new record, and I saw this, and I think he might have told me before, but Tracy G is a good friend of our show, has done a lot of great things for us, and I saw that he played with you guys briefly back in the day before y'all got signed. I thought that was pretty cool. Do you remember the days of playing with Tracy, or is it pretty brief?
He was with us briefly before we ever got our record deal, but then I ended up touring with him when he was in Dio on the Strange Highways tour. I think it was 94.
Yeah, I was going to ask if y'all got that partially because Tracy maybe got in Ronnie's ear, or how that worked out, or if it was just kind of fate.
Well, Ronnie dug me, and he dug our band, and we toured with him four or five times during the years. So, you know, Tracy was in the band, and that's how we sort of reconnected.
That's awesome, man. Well, let's jump into the new record. When you started putting this thing together, as far as getting a band together, did you think about, you know, contacting some of the Love Hate guys from back in the day, or what were your thoughts on trying to get musicians to play on this record?
Well, originally I was going to, I live in Las Vegas, originally I was going to get Vegas guys. I was going to get Blas Elias, the Slaughter drummer, on drums, but he's so busy. He works six nights a week, and there are other guys that are really good here in Vegas, but they all work so much that, you know what I mean, it wouldn't have worked. So
I went back to LA and got guys that I've worked with before on some of my solo records, and I got my old Love Hate guitar player, Darren Householder, and yeah, that's how that happened.
Dude, Darren is a freaking monster. I used to dig a bunch of his old shrapnel stuff back in the day. So you got a badass guitar player for sure.
Yeah, he's. I had to tie a few fingers behind his back, you know what I mean? So we could...
Yeah, I bet, man. I bet. Well, the brand new record, as you know, is called All You Need Is Soul. And, man, the first track, I mean, really kind of kicks you in the balls coming right out the gate. You're going to miss me when I'm gone. Can you kind of tell me how that track came together? And I like the video. The video was really cool. I like that old footage of you on the cross in Hollywood. That was awesome.
Yeah.
You're going to miss me when I'm gone.
Yeah, I mean, the record's great. That's one of my favorite songs. It's got a very strong chorus. You know, it's just a high energy song, and I think lyrically people can relate to the chorus. You're gonna miss me when I'm gone. I'm sure everyone's gone through, you know, similar experiences in their lives.
Oh yeah, for sure. Another track I want to bring up is When the Devil Comes. That's got a really cool bluesy edge to it, and I noticed a lot of the bluesier edge in the record that I really, really dig. Can you give us a cool story of how that song came together?
There was a time a year or two ago, I was working with some people writing for television. A lot of us musician guys have our own, you know, Pro Tools rig in our house, and for some reason, you know, let's write songs for Duck Dynasty, or let's write songs for, you know, Deadliest Catch, or you know what I mean. And these shows are always looking for music, you know, because they grind out those shows. So anyway, there was this show called Hell on Wheels, which was sort of that was a bird, by the way.
Nice.
There was a show called Hell on Wheels that I really dug, a Western themed show, and I thought, I'm going to try and write a Western, you know, themed song, and that lyrically, that's where that song comes from. and it was written on an acoustic guitar, and we demoed that one up. And then when my Frontiers record deal came through, I had that song, but it was kind of an acoustic number, and I sort of Led Zeppelin it up a little bit, and kind of, you know what I mean, gave it a little bit of Montrose, a little bit of Led Zeppelin, and turned it into that, you know, 7-minute song.
And it is killer, dude. I really dig the bluesier stuff on the record. Another great song. I mean, there's a lot of great songs on this record. Yeah, you should be very proud of the product you put out here, brother. I'm really digging Mortified, too.
Yeah, that's a cool song.
Do you have a cool story about how that song came together?
Sometimes you're speaking sarcastically about a woman that you're with, you know what I mean, and you're kind of talking some smack back and forth, and that's where that song came from. I also borrowed a little bit from the Blackout in a Red Room. The drums. On that song are sort of like Blackout in the Red Room, the way Joey used to play. I just kind of dug the way he played that open hi-hat, kind of splashy, noisy, kind of punk rock vibe.
Oh, it's cool, dude. It's cool. Yeah, I dig that too, man. Let me ask you this. As far as these songs, are these songs, did you spend a couple years writing this material? Or some of this, some older stuff you've had in the tank? Or how did the album come together as far as the songs that you put on there?
I had a couple of the songs written. I had Devil Comes written. And the ballad, It Doesn't Matter, was written. Again, at a certain time for a certain thing. But, you know, I'd say 3/4 of the record was written within a month or two period, where I just kind of went into my metaphysical Unabomber shack and just ground out the songs. That's why, maybe one of the reasons why there is that kind of constant thread of energy through the whole thing, because it was, some people, you know, have records that are a collection of songs, and they kind of sound like a collection of songs written at different times. And what I dug about the Blackout in the Red Room record was that it was written, you know, in a certain period of time in our lives, and you can really hear that, you know what I mean? It is a constant stream of energy, and that's pretty much the way that the writing went on this one. You know, All You Need Is Soul, Gonna Miss Me When I'm Gone. A lot of them were written in a very kind of tight period of time, and so they all do sound like the same, you know, guy.
Yeah, I dig the variety, and I'm always kind of curious from an artist when they're putting a record together. You know, track listing to me is very important to keep me interested in a record. So I like how your record starts off really heavy, and I like how it ends as well. But there's a lot of variety in the middle where it keeps the listener interested. Were you very involved in putting the songs in the track listing order?
Well, I'm pretty much, as being a control freak, I'd say I was pretty much micromanage the entire thing.
That's awesome.
From beginning to end, every bass note, every guitar note, every drum hit, every everything, you know, that's the agony of being a control micromanager, is that you feel you're, you know, responsible for every thing, you know what I mean? And when it comes out great, like it did on this record, you can sit back and go, man, oh man, that's amazing. And, you know, and conversely, when it doesn't, you're the only one to blame.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an awesome thing that I've seen about Frontiers. I know if you go back a few years ago with some of the bands they were signing, kind of bringing back, it seemed like there was like this edict that, hey guys, you know, we want album number one that you put out. We're going to kind of take control here, but it seems like the artists I've talked to over the last year or so on Frontiers, it's like Frontiers said, do your thing. Just give us something good, well, you know?
Well, give us something good. I think that's what the main thing is. I think Frontiers is an amazing label, you know, but they're a business like any other business, and record companies, you know, they want something good. I mean, you can't just, you know, write a bunch of crap and take their money. You know what I mean? I mean, you couldn't do that, you know, with a major label, and you certainly can't do that, you know, with Frontiers nowadays. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think the artists, if you're smart, you know what I mean, and you take it seriously, then, you know, you bust ass and you take it, you know, and then Frontiers goes, hey, we really like where you're coming with this. And it's a mutually agreed vibe, you know what I mean? They want it to be good just as much as you do, you know what I mean? They don't want to, you know.
Yeah, like you said, it's a business, and you know, they want to put out something solid. And it really shows in this record that you put your heart and soul in it, and that comes across to the listener, especially a guy that's been listening to you for 30 years, you know, that you put your heart and soul in this thing. The songs are solid, really good, and this is going to be one that's going to stand the test of time, I think.
Well, you know what, if I say that, if you are a fan, a listener of Love Hate, and you dug the Blackout in the Red Room record, and a lot of people do and have. Now, I still get compliments from that record 30 years later, and that's awesome. You know, and if you dug that record, you're going to dig this record, you know, because it's not some, I didn't turn into Sting, you know what I mean? I didn't turn into Cat Stevens, you know, overnight, and all of a sudden, you know, there's Persian rugs everywhere and I'm smoking a hookah. Well, I am smoking a hookah, but, you know, the right hookah.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? If you're a fan of the old classic Love Hate and you dug that vibe and that energy, well, you're going to dig this record. And I think, you know, you hit it on the head. You know, you know where I'm coming from, and you got what you were hoping for.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man, for sure. And, you know, just curious, I know we got to wrap up here shortly, but something I find fascinating about your band, there's a couple others from that era coming out in the late 80s, early 90s, where you guys weren't the mold of the, you know, hair band, so to speak. You guys were kind of on that raw, edgier type sound where you almost thought that you guys would transcend through that grunge period a bit, even though you were pretty heavier than some of that stuff that was coming out. What do you think, you know, do you blame it on the record companies kind of that you guys didn't maybe flourish a bit more in the 90s? Or
Well, you got to understand that, you know, music is cyclical in the sense that it follows trends like everyone else. You know, I've seen all these trends. You know, it was for about 5 years, the Sunset Strip was where you had to be. And that's where all the bands came out of, and that's where all the music came out of. And then it was the Seattle thing, and then it was Green Day, and then it was Korn. You know what I mean? And it's just, to our credit, most of the guys from my, you know, the Warrants and the LA Guns, and and stuff like that. You know, we didn't just put on flannel shirts and get seven-string guitars and try to be something that we weren't. You know, we still did our thing and played, recognizing that our fans, you know, weren't going to go away, and our music would eventually come back, which it did. You know, when I joined LA Guns in 1998, I mean, we were playing arenas again with the Rock Never Stops tour. I mean, it was just, you know, you just kind of have to hang out and chill, and our kind of music, because it's good, you know, essentially, and it'll come back, you know, and you can still play, and you can still, you know, play live and make records and you know, do your thing.
Oh yeah, and it's awesome, like I said earlier in the interview, is that you were one of the ones that persevered along with some of your contemporaries, man. I'm so glad I came from that area. Still love that music, and I love the new music that artists are putting out today. So it's awesome that you guys, you know, fought the fight and carried that torch all the way into the, you know, new millennium here. So I think it's awesome, man.
Oh, killer. I'm glad you dig my new record, and you know, that record called All You Need Is Soul on Frontiers, available May 11th. I got a pump.
Well, hey, real last question here, Jizzy. As far as touring goes, I know you're huge in the UK. What about some U.S.
Texas?
States? What are your... Oh, well, I mean, I see you've toured a lot in the UK, so I figured you had to be pretty big out there. As far as U.S. states go, do you have any plans for the summer? Any, like, package thing, or... Yeah, what are your thoughts?
Well, what I have going is that I do have a major, a UK tour. I leave in a week, and I'm doing a month of dates, and I'm doing festivals over there. I mean, yeah, there's big festivals in Europe that I can do, and it's awesome. But yeah, I mean, if the record comes out and the record, you know, has some sort of airplay or whatever, there's always the chance of doing stuff in the States, and I would love to. So that depends on, you know, if Texas digs it. You know, if they do, then I'll be there hat in hand.
There, well, we will fly the flag for you, brother. Well, Jizzy, before we let you go, is there anything you want to tell the fans out there?
Again, my record All You Need Is Soul comes out May 11th, and you know, people have heard some of the songs on the YouTube and checked it out, and like I said, I mean, the record's great and I dig it, and I think if you're a fan of the old Love Hate, you'll dig it too.
Well, Jizzy, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com, and we want to tell all the fans, as Jizzy has told you, go get his new record, All You Need Is Soul, coming out May 11th on Frontiers. Jizzy, awesome to talk to you, dude. I hope to catch you live here in Texas, or I'll travel to come see if I can, and we will share a beer, or not share a beer, I'll buy you a beer.
All right, and we're on.
All right. Well, Jizzy, great talking, man. Thanks for everything, and good luck with that tour, man.
Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Bands. song, which is the theme song to Right to Rock Podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out. And keep checking us out. And horns up.